Hello, and welcome to another catch-up episode. Maybe I should use a different music for the catch-up episode. Something, you know, a bit peppier, maybe.
Hello, and welcome to another catch-up episode of this exciting...
No, that's not me at all. Maybe... Nope. I think something a bit more, you know...
Hello there. Welcome. Let's catch up.
How you doing? Oh, that's far too sexy. God, I'm slightly aroused just even listening to that. I need something a bit, you know, holier.
Yeah, that's more like it. Hello and welcome to you all. You're all very welcome here today to this catch-up episode.
No. Just channeling Father Ryan, a very charismatic priest when I was growing up. Used to start every mass with, hello, you're all very welcome here today. So, how are you? You know, if you're on your own, feel free to answer. One word. I'll ask you again. You ready? How are you? Wow, you chose that word. Okay, well, I'm hoping it was a good word. Not that there's any good or bad, you know, everything just is. So, quite a bit going on since we last spoke in this catch-up way. As you may or may not know, I was born in the 60s, the early 60s. 1963, to be exact. And just to give you a bit of context on that, that would be season 3 of Mad Men. That's season 3 out of seven seasons. And I remember watching, I think it was the pilot of Mad Men, and slowly becoming more and more anxious as I watched it. And it sort of, it didn't click until there was a scene where, like, the main character was Don Draper, just if you've never seen it, Don Draper and his wife Betty, and they had some neighbors over, and their kids were there, the neighbors' kids, Don's kids, and one of Don's kids did something, knocked over an ashtray or was chasing or doing something slightly naughty, and the neighbor slaps him in the face. And when that happened, I kind of got a shock inside. Because it's like a light bulb went on inside. I was like, oh, yeah, that's the way it was back then. Random strangers could just slap you as a kid and nobody even batted an eyelid. Like, it's not like Don went, came over to him and said, hey, you can't hit my son or anything like that. It was just like, oh, yeah, naughty Jimmy or whatever it was. And everybody just kept going. And I say all that because that was the culture I grew up in. Not the kid-hitting culture. Yes, the kid-hitting, that was part of it. But everything else as well. You know, all the prejudices of the time were just floating around in the air. And I just absorbed them all. And it's important, I think, for someone of my age to start from that position. To go, yes, I'm a racist. Yes, I'm sexist. I'm homophobic. I'm very environmentally unfriendly or unconscious. I've got male privilege. I've got white privilege. The things that weren't even talked about back then, I've got them. That's where I start. And I think you kind of have to. Because like I was ahead of my time. Like back then, I mean, pretty much I've felt like I've always been ahead of my time. So even back then, I was like, I didn't feel comfortable. Like what was considered norm, the norm back then, it didn't feel comfortable. So it's easy for somebody like me to kind of feel like, oh, no, I'm not a racist at all. No, I'm not a sexist. Oh, no, I haven't got any of that stuff. That I think would be very naive and just looking for trouble. Not, you know, look, I don't mean looking for that not accepting it isn't looking for trouble. I just mean like it's naive to kind of think that I am so special that I was immune to the culture that I grew up in. I think a much smarter place or a much wiser, humble place is to accept all that. Yes, I am all of those things. I have them in me. I'm not wild about it. I'm not happy about it at all. But I'm unconscious. I'm unconscious of these things. I'm unconscious of what's really going on for other people. I'm unconscious of what it's like for marginalized people. I'm unconscious of what it's like for women, like what their experience, what their lived experience is. I'm unconscious of what a gay man or a gay woman's lived experience is, or someone who's trans or anything. For me, it's like important to start from the place of, I don't know. And then, you know, when something's pointed out, like, hey, this is not great, to not bluster and go, like, the Black Lives Matter thing is very in our awareness at the moment because of everything that's been happening in America. And I see people of my age and even younger go, yeah, but all lives matter, you know, and that's that part, I think, coming up and going, oh no, I'm really tolerant and I really love, you know, instead of just going Black Lives Matter and there's a full stop at the end of that. Yes, Black Lives Matter. And then keep quiet and then listen. Do your best to listen. That's what I try and do, is not bluster and not, you know, get into what about and I'm a really good person and try and defend some position that I might have on the inside. Like, I think it's much more important to listen, to try and listen, because when there's injustice, and it's not like that's the only injustice going on in the world. Of course, there's loads of injustice going on, but like you kind of invalidate the person when they're saying something to you. Like, there's an injustice going on right here in front of you, and you go, yeah, but there's a lot, you know, that's just one injustice in the whole, you know, in the rest of the whole world, and there's so much other things going on. That diminishes in some way what the person is saying, whether that's a woman telling you about her experience, or a gay man or woman, or a Black person telling you what their experience is. The compassionate thing, the right thing to do, is to listen, I think. It comes from, well, let me give an example, right? Every now and then I get reviews for the podcast on iTunes, and most of the time they are very positive. I get lovely reviews, right? But last week or the week before, I got this review, and the headline was, "Why laugh at awkward moments?" And then the next bit was, "And sound like a smug MF." And MF stands for mother flipper. Doesn't stand for that, but I don't want this one to be an explicit episode. So yeah, a smug mother flipper. Now, my initial reaction at the, you know, inside is like, oh my God, that's what? How very dare they? How very dare they have the wrong idea about me? I'm not smug. I'm not smug at all. And that's that kind of reaction is what can lead you into having all sorts of arguments with people online. I think it's in the same thing. Like, I'm just bringing it back to my own experience. And it's that thing of being misunderstood. And there's a part of me wants to explain, you know, why I laugh in certain moments and explain the context and all sorts of things. But I don't. Now, I don't because I think it's a good practice to just be okay with people misunderstanding me, because it means I have to look inside me and go, well, do I know what I meant? Okay, that landed, that, you know, it left me a certain way and it arrived at that other person and it wasn't the way it left me. But do I know what I meant? Do I know what was going on? Do I know how I feel? Do I know what's in my heart? Yes. Okay, then that's enough. I don't have to convince somebody else, because in my experience, it doesn't work anyway. You can communicate, but if you communicate expecting that communication is going to arrive pristinely in exactly the way that it left you, in my experience, that's a recipe for unhappiness. So I think it's okay for me to be misunderstood once I understand myself. Like that it's okay for me to know that that's enough. And like, I think that's where the whole thing about virtue signaling, which is, it's a very crushing kind of thing to say to somebody, you know, you're just virtue signaling, you know. But I think where that is coming from is like, it's a roundabout way of somebody saying, you are just trying to make me understand that you're a great person and you, you know, are this way or that way or whatever. Which I think for myself, it's better, much better for me to know how I feel, what's in my heart. I don't want to oppress anybody. I don't want any injustice. What I want for myself, I want for everybody. And being okay with that and just allowing that to be inside me gives me the space to listen, to truly listen. Because I'm not kind of listening and hearing how that person might be misunderstanding me or projecting onto me, and that I have to keep defending myself or going, oh, no, you know, no, I don't really think you get how brilliant I am or how, like, you know, tolerant I am or how accepting I am or any of that kind of stuff. That, you know, someone's got to listen. Like, someone has got to just humbly be open-hearted, take it and listen, I think. Because, like, I don't know, have you noticed how quickly things are changing? Like, you know, it used to be that, oh, next year things will be different. When I look back on how things were last year, you know, I can see that things were different. Now it's yesterday. It's right up to yesterday. Things were yesterday. Like, it's happened a few times. I've recorded a podcast with somebody, and then 2 or 3 days later, I'm emailing them to say, hey, the podcast is out. And it's a completely different world. Like, the conversation we had 3 days beforehand was in a different world and different place. So what it looks like to me from a very far back kind of position is, it looks to me like the world's gone through a growth spurt, you know, just like you did when you were a teenager. You know, I don't know if you went through growth spurts or you consciously went through growth spurts. I remember it. I still remember it. I don't remember many physical pains in my body, but I remember the pains I used to get in my shins whenever I'd go through a growth spurt. And that's what it looks like to me, that the world has gone through is a growth spurt. And I'm talking about everything, the COVID thing, the civil unrest, and there's lots of other things going on in the world other than America. You know, there's a lot of change happening, and it's happening fast, and as a result there's a lot of pain, growth pains, and I'm not diminishing it. Pain is pain, and it's no fun, and there are, you know, very unpleasant things happening. But it seems to me that at the core of this kind of growth spurt is dealing with fear. Like, a lot of it seems to be based around fear and confronting fear in ourselves. And it goes back to what I was talking about in previous catch-up episodes about sovereignty, internal sovereignty, and about choosing how it's going to be inside you. And, you know, as part of the kind of growth spurt, there's a lot of external stimulus to encourage us to be afraid and to amplify our fears. So it seems like the opportunity is to look at fear and decide whether I'm going to be afraid or not, and choosing not to be afraid, or choosing to see through it. Because, like I was saying in a previous one, like, you don't know what the future is going to be. No, none of us do. And it is changing fast. And the references, like, it before, you could kind of go, well, 2 and 2 is usually 4. So when that 2 and that 2 is added together, next week will probably be 4. Now 2 doesn't look like 2 anymore. It looks more like 7. Sometimes it looks like 3. And the other 2 doesn't look like a 2 either. So I haven't a clue what next week's going to look like. And that, you know, there's a space in that uncertainty, being right up with your nose pressed up against the glass of uncertainty to be afraid. But really, as I said, we don't know what the future is. And we can't use the past to kind of create an imagined future that we think is going to, you know, that will calm our that space for being afraid. So really, it's a chance to come more and more into the moment and go, well, how is it now? How are things now, really? Now it's pretty good, you know, or now it's not so great, but I've got more than most. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're doing okay. Okay. There are people who don't have the resources to listen to a podcast. They are hungry. Now, I'm not saying that to make you feel bad or to diminish what's going on, but if to come into now and go, okay, I've got enough food, I've got shelter for now, okay, just for now, and I'm reasonably healthy. If you are, I've got people in my life who love me. If you have, I've got a dog or a cat. If you have, you know, there's lots of stuff that you can look at and go, okay, this is things as they are. And how am I inside right now? Because regardless of what you've got inside. And that you do have control over, a certain amount of control. And that you can come back to and go, okay, yes, I could be afraid, but I am not going to. That's not to say that you don't do your best to make plans, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just having a look at the possibility. I could be wrong here, but this is what I'm doing anyway. Having a look at the possibility that what's going on is a growth. It's a growth in lots of ways, but one of the growth spurts that's happening is growth in consciousness. And it's a chance to go, okay, am I going to fall into this space of fear? Or am I going to choose something else? That's putting it pretty simply, but it kind of comes down to that, I think, for me. So, I hope you choose something other than fear. It'd be good to have a little bit of music to transition from one thing to another, like some sort of segue music. In fact, that's the music I used to use on my first podcast. Yes, this is not my first podcast. This is my second podcast. The first podcast I had was in 2007, which means I've been podcasting for 13 plus years. Yeah, the first podcast I have was called The Wellness Detective Manual, and it was to accompany the book that I had written in 2006 called Why Do We Get Sick? Why Do We Get Better? A Wellness Detective Manual. And I had a little podcast that went with it. Here's the intro. Hello and welcome. My name is John Dalton, and this is the Wellness Detective Manual, helping you become your own wellness detective, because if nothing is random, then everything is a clue. Pretty smooth, all right? I've just nearly finished the second edition of that book. Coming out. Well, it's already on Amazon. The book is. It's been on Amazon since 2006, but the second edition, slightly updated version. And what's very nice is my daughter did the cover artwork. It's not that's not up on Amazon yet. But yeah, it's lovely. It's a book about. It's an interesting book if you're interested in health. It's a book that's a distillation of hundreds of conversations I had over the years with people that I worked with, you know, everything from sort of small pains and aches to terminal illnesses. And even if you're not interested in health, there's a section on it about like what that kind of inquiry into why we get sick and why we get better, where that kind of led me into, you know, the seeing the stories that unfold in people's lives. And it's just fantastic. It's just a fantastic book. Definitely should read it. In fact, actually, This isn't a segue. It's actually, I'm thinking that I would like to record that as an audiobook. Now, I had a go at recording one of my very first book as an audiobook, just as a kind of tester, and the technical requirements are too much for me. And I'm pretty good technically, right? But I'm not a sound engineer, and you know, I had a go at doing it myself, following their guidelines. The audiobook side of Amazon is called Audible, as you probably know. Anyway, I'm asking you about it. Is if any of you out there happen to know a sound engineer who'd like to help me with that, if you could give them my details and ask them to get in touch, I can rearrange my little studio setup here to whatever is needed. But the hard thing about it is there's no way you can just, that I know of anyway, that you can just send some little bit in to test the audio to see if you've got the levels right. So you have to record the whole thing, which takes forever. And then they just go, no, not acceptable. and you don't really know why. So yeah, someone who knows Audible, what they want. And I mean, I have a good idea of what I need to do here, but just somebody who's maybe gone through it. So if you're listening and you know somebody, or you are somebody, if you could get in touch, that would be really good. Right, time for this. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm really enjoying this podcast. I've listened to a few now and they're brilliant. And there's so many of them. And I've learned so much from listening to them. And you know what? If I met that John Dalton fella in real life, I'd love to buy him a cup of tea and have a chat with him. I'd love to do that every month if I could. Well, now you can. The tea part, at least, because this podcast runs on cups of tea bought for me by people like you who listen to the podcast and send me the price of a cup of tea once a month through the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word. And if you're one of those people who already send me cups of tea through Patreon, thanks a million. The tea is lovely and I really appreciate it. Now, the great thing is that if you can't afford to send me the price of a cup of tea, or you don't want to, that's fine. You still get exactly the same podcast for free. It's sort of an honor system where the people who can afford it and want to pay for the people who can't or don't want to. So it's all lovely. So if you'd like to send me a cup of tea once a month, you can do that through Patreon. I'd really appreciate it. It makes a huge difference to me. I've had lots of nice feedback about these catch-up episodes and how much people are enjoying them and how much value they're getting out of them. Tirza Villages on Patreon says, "Thanks for putting out such wonderful content. I'm wondering if you've ever done an episode about your own art." No, I haven't, Tiraz, and I don't plan to for a while. My art journey has been long in some ways and short in other ways, and it's kind of ongoing, really, for me. There isn't a huge amount to say about it. I mean, you can go and look at what I've done. Everything that I've done is on my website, and like most artists... It's like, yeah, the stuff on my website is not what I'm working on right now, but then what I'm working on right now is not finished. So what I can say about my art is it's taking a long time for me to finish paintings. Doing this podcast in some ways has kind of it's taken up time that maybe I would have spent painting. But then on the other side, it's like this reverse osmosis thing happens with me when I talk to these really high caliber artists that I talk to. When I go back to painting, I've improved in some way. So it's a, you know, I don't feel like I'm losing out, but just time wise, it does take a lot of time. So, I have a few paintings. I've probably got about 5 or 6 paintings that I'm kind of working on at the moment that are not finished. And even the subject of them is kind of old. I don't think I would, you know, start. They've taken me so long to do. I wouldn't start them now, but I'm a bit like, once I've committed to them, it's like, well, I want to finish them. I know for myself, I was kind of in that, I don't know if it's a trap or not, maybe it's not. I had to kind of see that I could paint well and draw well and do all those, like that I had the skill to do stuff before I could start to, you know, jump off that structure a little bit. I'm self-taught. I never went to art college or anything like that. And I only really started painting and drawing in earnest until 2013. Mainly because I'm left-handed. When I was in school, I wasn't beaten or anything like that. Well, I was, but not for that, not for being left-handed. But the school I went to was beside a teacher training college. And as I said, it was in the 60s. So I can remember sitting at in front of this big desk, like a job interview. And there was one of the teacher training people. I think they must have been doing a study on left-handedness or something. But I can remember my legs dangling, you know, off the seat. So that'll give you an idea that I was small. And this very earnest teacher teaching professor on the other side, saying something along the lines of, "So, John, how do you feel about being left-handed?" Which, like, in hindsight, was a ridiculous thing to ask a, you know, 7 or 8 year old, because I didn't know. I was like, good. And, you know, did you think you'd like to be maybe right-handed? Like, no. But the net result was, of all that sort of talking back and forth and, you know, trying one hand and the other, I don't know if things have changed in school, but there was no real structure for teaching left-handed kids how to use a right-handed system. Because, you know, if you're left-handed, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, but if you're right-handed, this maybe has never occurred to you. Like, writing is actually predisposed to right-handed people because your hand travels from left to right across the page, which means the kind of the writing flows out of your pen. If you're left-handed, it's like you're going backwards because your hand is going across what you've just written all the time, and you're trying to see underneath the pen all the time. I mean, I can remember doing, like, I don't know how they teach kids how to write now, but back then we had, like, a copy book, and, you know, today we're going to do the letter T. And, you know, you'd do, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 T's, and then we'd all form a queue, go up and show the teacher our copy book. It's insane when I think about it now. Anyway, I remember getting to the teacher and showing him my T's, and he looked at them and went, something along the lines, it was very crushing, smarmy, disparaging, something like, "Oh, all your telegraph, they look like telegraph poles that have been in a storm." Which it took me a while to actually figure out what he meant, but I got the gist of it. So I started off, as I say, left-handed, and not thinking I was very good at drawing. Because I wasn't. I kind of, you know, like, if you've ever read that book, Drawn on the Right Side of Your Brain, Betty Edwards has this exercise about, she can tell where you gave up on yourself as an artist. You know, she gets people to draw a picture, and then you say, well, that, you know, looks like you decided you couldn't draw at age 12 or 13 or 10 or whatever. And I think that happened to me. I kind of decided, no, this is too hard. Plus, one of my sister, Trish, she was like a couple of years older than me, and she was naturally predisposed to be an artist. So in the way the family dynamics work, it was like, well, Trish was the artist, and, you know, she could obviously draw better than I could. So I kind of went, oh, well, I'm not, you know, an artist. So it took me years to kind of go full circle, and to kind of, I think it was around 2013, I kind of went, well, yeah, I probably can't draw, but I'd like to have a go at it. And I started learning, and I did do a little bit of training here in Ireland just to kind of get me started. But yeah, most of it's self-taught. So yeah, it's ongoing. It's a process. It's part of the bigger picture of my life. Like when I'm interviewing artists, And they talk about painting all day long and being happy to do that and how passionate they are about it. I know I'm not that kind of artist. Like, I'm like that about consciousness and spirituality. Like, I could, you know, if I was on a podcast, if I was being interviewed on a podcast, I would be, that's what I would be sounding like, because that's something I've thought about from since I was a kid all the way through and still goes on. That's the main thing. That's the big thing. In my life. And then I do these other things. You know, I'm an artist. I do this podcast. I write. And I, you know, treat people like with them for who are sick and that kind of thing as well. But they are all just the things I do, you know. The overarching thing is this mystical, spiritual other thing. And I think that is starting to come out in my painting as well. Like the way it comes out in everything else I do. Speaking of treating people and working with people, just in case anyone who's listening to this is a craniosacral therapist or is interested in being a craniosacral therapist, when the global meditation retreat started, that's what I'm calling it now, I'm sick of using all the other names, there were a lot of craniosacral therapists, because I'm, you know, on different groups on the internet to do with that as well, and I'm reasonably well known in that. They just couldn't work anymore. So people who were either therapists, craniosacral therapists, couldn't, you know, they had to close their practices, like I did. Or they were students who were either midway or just beginning their treatment. So I had done a postgraduate, because I, as you may know, I used to train people in craniosacral therapy. I founded the Australian Institute of Craniosacral Therapy and had the course accredited with the government, and, you know, I used to teach a diploma in it in Australia. And I did postgraduate trainings as well in different countries. And one of them that I did in South Africa in Cape Town, I videoed it, and I had a series of DVDs that I used to sell. So when this global retreat thing started, meditation retreat, it started in March, there was all these therapists going, oh, what are we going to do? And I thought, oh, you know what? So I just put all those DVDs, there's like 8 hours of video, I put them up on YouTube, on a private part of YouTube, and let the different groups, craniosacral groups, know that if they wanted, they could watch them for free. They just had to get in touch and I'd send them the links. So if you're listening and you're a craniosacral therapist or you're interested in that sort of thing, it is a postgrad thing. So it's not, you know, it's for people who are therapists or in training. Get in touch and I will send you the links and you can watch the videos. Couldn't help myself there. Yeah, just totally rocking that jazzy riff. I don't think I'm going to use it again, but just for this episode. Something else I've been doing is, you probably know, or maybe I mentioned it before, I meditate, you know, I meditate on and off during the day. And in the course of one of my meditations, I think when all the civil unrest kicked off, it was around when that started happening in America. Again, I was just meditating and it was like, oh, you should probably share. There's a lot of anxiety around. You should probably put one of these on Instagram Live. I was like, oh, really? Oh, okay. So I've been doing that every day at around 5:30 Irish time. I've been doing one of the meditations that I do. I've just been doing it live on Instagram. It's just 15 minutes. Yeah, I found it very hard to do because, it's pretty, I'm reasonably used to recording things with the podcast, but just live is pretty intense. And then, you know, to be sitting there for 15 minutes with your eyes closed. Yeah, it's like performance art, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. Me and Marina Abramovic. Yeah. I'm up there. It isn't performance art, though. It is meditation. I do talk a little bit about it beforehand. Before we start, I don't talk through it because, I want to meditate. I don't want to be thinking about what I have to say. And also, I find it kind of annoying if I'm doing meditation with somebody and they start talking through it. But yeah, it's getting a lot of very positive feedback about it. It seems to be the right thing to do. So yeah, it does record down onto Instagram to TV. So yeah, if it's something you're interested in, I found that like meditation is like one of those things. It's like one of those, it's like a word that you sort of hear and then you kind of get a gist of what it means and then you start using it too. And then, but you don't really know what it means. I did that a lot. Unless you actually look it up and go, oh, okay, so that's, I was close, but not exactly right. So it's similar with meditation. Like it's talked about a lot, but the actual, how do you actually do that? What's involved? I've found that people are very pleased to have just a very simple introduction to it. And I just explain what I do and people can do whatever they want. So yeah, it's 15 minutes. You can either tune in live or you can watch it afterwards. You just see it. You'll see it on my profile, my Instagram profile, whatever, you know. Okay, so last thing I want to ask you was, I've been thinking about doing the episode I did with the Bennetts, the two episodes I've done with the Bennetts, very popular, about collectors. Do you want more episodes about collectors? That kind of thing, or ancillary people to the art world, like art consultants maybe, or gallery owners, or, you know, not the artist, exclusively the artists. Let me know, because I'm thinking about it, but I'm not sure if everybody just wants to keep going with the artists. Like with this uncut format, it means I can just get to a lot more artists because everything is just quicker. But maybe you want, more gallery owners and ancillary people, gallery owners, collectors, people like that. So let me know. I'm also thinking of doing maybe slightly shorter ones with just new artists. I kind of like to highlight new artists that I come across that I think are great or have great. You can kind of get a sense of they're great now and they're going to be even better. So I'm thinking of that as well. Like young artists, maybe like two in an episode rather than a full. I don't know if you've noticed, but like when I talk to artists who are older, like say I just had Stephen Essel and then I had Daniel Sprick, and because they're, older people, they've got a lot of life experience and they've got a lot to say, whereas people who are younger haven't got as much life experience. They might have a lot to say, but they haven't got as much life experience. So I was thinking maybe we could just like put two of them together or three of them together or whatever. But maybe no one's interested in that. So yeah, let me know. Or if you've got some idea, if you're like, oh, I'd love if you did a podcast about something or other. It's not like I'm short. It's of people or artists. I have a very long list of artists that I'm slowly working through. But, just to be more responsive and open. And get more of the conversation from everybody else. You, specifically. okay, that's it for now. I hope you're well. I hope you're of good cheer and taking advantage of the wonderful opportunity that we're all in the middle of at the moment. Okay, so till the next time. Bye for now.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti.
Actually, I'd prefer a cup of tea. A cup of tea would be lovely. So, yeah, just a little reminder, mainly because every second or third person who becomes a patron has got in touch with me and said, you know what, I've been listening to your podcast for ages, and I didn't become a patron, not because I don't have the money, not because I don't think it's great, I just didn't get around to it. So this is a little friendly reminder that if you'd like to be a patron, you'd like to buy me a cup of tea, go to patreon.com/John Dalton, gently does it, all one word, or follow the link in the show notes to become a patron. I would really appreciate it if you could do that, particularly if you've been meaning to and you just haven't got around to it. It would be great. It would mean a lot to me. All right. Thank you. Bye. We are the Argyle Dimps. So buy us a drink.
We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. Come on, buy us a drink. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle Pimps.